other factors certainly can normally affect our performance during the year, whether it's diminishing capacity through attrition in management and operational positions which could not be filled because of the ceiling to our COE. The resource constraints still remain a serious challenge and damper operations and service delivery, as well as an unresolved labor dispute relating to working hours. Chairperson, I will now hand over to Mr. Mastana to talk to the financial performance.
Thank you, Chairperson. Our financial performance, will deal with the audited expenditure report and the actual versus budget per program. We'll then deal with it also per economic classification. We'll then deal with the departmental revenue, the 2016-17 audit outcome, compliance with legislation, and then steps that needed to be taken to improve the audit outcome. Chairperson. And if we move on to slide 35, the department expenditure was, we understand our budget by in total, adjusted to the total, by 12 million rand. And the bulk of that was that the department had been allocated during the financial year 12 million rand by the National Treasury. And the money was to be used as part of the cost saving measures to install video conferences, conferencing facility in all our nine provinces, and also to introduce the VoIP, which is the voice over internet protocol. Those are telephones that don't use your normal sort of telephone line, but your data lines. Unfortunately, due to the complexity of these two projects. And the tender process that took longer than we had anticipated, that 12 million rand could not be spent in the 16-17 financial year. However, we did apply for a rollover to the National Treasury, which was approved. And I'm pleased to report, Chairperson, that the project has been rolled out, and we are busy with the testing phase at the moment and training of the users. On the expenditure in terms of the economic classification, I think the key item is on the compensation of employees. There where we underspent by 57,000, and on goods and services on 224,000. Basically, meaning that we spent all the budget that was allocated to the department. As it says, on the extreme light, it's 100%. Expenditure for the year 2016-2017. On the revenue side, we normally estimate what is to be collected in the coming years. And for 16 and 17, we had estimated that the department would collect 962 million rand, but the actual amount that was collected was 1,099,000. The money that is collected, some of it is collected by Delco. And in this 16-17 financial year, Delcom only collected 298 million rand versus the 32 that had been collected in the previous financial year. And then on the audit outcome, I think the Chairperson, most of these items have been touched on by the Auditor General, so I won't go into detail with them, except to say that Chairperson, as was explained in the previous presentation by the Auditor General, was that the financial statements that we submitted on the 31st of May had some material errors in them, and we were able to fix those and submit again to the Auditor General on the 31st of July, and which then were then audited and has been presented by the AG that they were, that hence we got an audit outcome that was received. And one of the issues that also was was highlighted sort of by the Auditor General is the issue surrounding the department has a lot of litigation against it. And the AG noted that there's an uncertainty on those issues, that that also cannot quantify, you know, the amount that should be provided should those outcomes go against the department. So it is that risk that, that the department is facing around that as uncertainty. And the other item that was highlighted is the irregular expenditure, which Article 46 of that relates to the security tender. The security tender, the 70 million relates to 15-16, and then the other part is for 16-17. In that security tender, what had happened is that the department was advised via TPOS Anonymous that there were some irregularities in that tender, in the process when that tender was awarded to that security company. We then requested our internal audit to conduct a preliminary investigation, and their recommendation was that the matter should be taken out into the forensics. We should hire a forensic company to go deeper because our internal audit did not have capacity or skill to go deeper into that. And the outcome of that chairperson was that yes, they were found that there were processes and procedures that the evaluation committee had not followed, you know, in our tender. Hence, the prior year payments and payments that we've paid in the current year were then declared irregular. And also for the 5 or 6 months of the current financial year, those amounts are still going to be regarded as irregular, and because the contract was only ended on the 31st of July 2017. So next year we'll still be reporting a portion of that as irregular expenditure. Then the balance chairperson of the amount of that is the legacy issues. For instance, 278 million of that relates to the WIO project, WMI project that was settled years back. So part of that relates to that. And then we also have, which has been alluded also by the Auditor General, 1.3 million of that was relating to the purchase of toilet papers outside the National Treasury transfers and contracts. Yes, Chairperson, the acting DJ has just reminded me that what has happened then to those matters. Firstly, let me deal with the security tender. The security tender, the officials that were involved in the bid evaluation committee and have been issued with what we call out the letters to respond in terms of why they should not be taken further or why should not we should be disciplined, you know, for that transition of the tender processes. We are awaiting outcomes of those responses, and depending what the outcome is, then further steps then will be a formal hearing, you know, will take place in terms of following the due process, obviously, chairperson. And what we've done as well is the general in the department, what we didn't have before, we've improved our tender processes or our procurement processes by enhancing our policy. For instance, we now, for all the tenders that are going out, we now have a bid specification committee that sits down and determines, you know, what should be the outcome of the bid. And once that is done, they present that to the bid adjudication committee. It gets approved, then the tender gets advertised. After that, a new committee sits in and deals with the evaluation process. And then again, they then go back and present that to the evaluation committee. So we feel with those robust policies in place that we've put in place, we should be able to overcome all of these problems that we've been facing in terms of the regular expenditure that the department faces. And under the issue of compliance with the legislation, we've already sort of covered this, that the financial statements that with the initial ones that we submitted were not in accordance with the prescribed reporting framework. We were able then uh, to, to, to relook at them, fix all the errors that were there and resubmit, and then yeah, the AG then took over from there. There were also misstatements on current assets and liabilities and cash flow, and which were identified by the Auditor General. We were also able to correct those and submit that back to the Auditor General. My colleague will assist me as well, the chairperson. Thank you, Chair. Okay, chairperson, I think that the first part is regarding the revenue, especially the revenue that is collected on our behalf by the Department of International Relations. What had happened was that at the time when we were preparing the books, we didn't have there was no agreement between the parties, that is us and the Accountant General and DERCO. How the revenue should be reported on and how it should be packaged. You know. We are only able to arrive at an agreement, which has then been, so we now find a memorandum of understanding, you know, with DERCO on the treatment of these revenue. And also, what was happening as well, Chairperson, was that the revenue that was collected by DERCO. We've now agreed that it should go straight into the National Revenue Fund. Yeah, that's the way. It should go directly to that, and we no longer have to account for it. But what was happening was that the money was collected by DERCO in overseas, and then the Home Affairs must then account, you know, for something that has been collected by another party. And when AG came to audit us, they would audit us as if the money was collected by the Department of Home Affairs. You know. So we needed to fix that so that the responsibility lies with them who are the actual collectors of the money. And the MOU that has been signed to fix that. And that outcome was as a result. As in fact, I've left our colleagues at the Auditor General, but they were also assisting us, you know, to make sure that accounting methodology is per the terms of the accounting standards that you needed to meet. Yeah. All right. Okay. Thanks, Chairperson. And then on the contractual obligations, we were still struggling in the previous financial year to settle all our debts within the 30-day period as per the prescripts. But we have put interventions in place, you know, to make sure that these are not happening. Firstly, the issue of payment goes through various business units within the finance unit, and what has happened is that They are sitting in different floors. So what we've done is we've now put all the people that are doing the processing in one place. Then secondly, we've also created a track and trace where if the invoice is received, it's recorded immediately and then submitted to whoever needs to authorize. Then we put a policy in place that ensures that we can monitor where the delay is in terms of why the invoice has not come back, so that it can be processed for payment. And with those interventions, we now, in fact, in the provinces, they are now achieving 100% payments of their invoices. You know, in all the nine, also decentralized the issue of payment as part of trying to deal with this matter as well. So in provinces, they are able, they are now achieving 100%, and it's now the head office that we need to make sure that this doesn't happen. In the past reports, I think in the last one that we were reported on, we were in the head office now. We were at 95% of payment of those emails. So we are getting better, Chairperson, but there's still a lot of work that we need to do. And then also, as part of the intervention now, remember, I spoke about the track and trace. Now, with the track and trace, we are now able to trace who's sitting with an invoice. You know, somebody is supposed to authorize the invoice as soon as it comes to their office, but it doesn't happen. Now we're able to trace that so-and-so is sitting with the invoice. And we then, through the office of the CFO, we started issuing out the letters to those people to find out, to ask them, you know, why they shouldn't be taken to the final process for not paying the invoice within 30 days. And that in itself is what is pushing us towards achieving that 100% venture percent. Chairperson, then as part of the steps to deal with the audit issues, we every after each and every audit, we take the audit report from the auditors and all that, and we extract all the findings that have happened, and we create a schedule which is called an audit action plan. And in that plan, we firstly assign the responsible person to preferably at senior level as well, so that we have accountability on those education plans. We then have a target date on those, and then again we meet bimonthly in what we call, we have a committee called the Back to Basics Committee, and it monitors that audit action plan to make sure that all those plans that have been identified are being implemented. Again, it's not a new thing that we're doing, it's been there in the past financial year. But we were Chairperson, I'll be honest, we were found wanting in certain areas, that there were areas that those action plans that were put in place, by the time the audit came on the 31st of March, we're still not at the stage of implementing them. But for the coming financial year, we then agreed that all the audit action plans should have an end date that ends with corresponds with the end of the financial year. So that when the auditor general starts their work, we've already implemented those issues. And then again, the audit action plan as well, so that as part of the monitoring, it gets presented at EXCO on a monthly basis to monitor whether there's movement, and if there's no movement, then appropriate action is then taken. It also then gets elevated also to the minister's committee to make sure that those action plans are being done. We have a reliance at the moment on our internal audit. In the past few years, we are not doing that, but now we are. We've given them a leeway so that they assist us in making sure that we achieve, you know, a proper sort of audit outcome at the end of the financial year. We've introduced a number of checklists that each senior manager must sign on a monthly basis, and it covers issues like assets being verified. It covers issues like the leave. I've all the leave has been captured in the system and accounted for. We issue out a payroll certificate to make sure that senior managers sign that people that are being paid by the department were not paying post employees, and those are parts of this compliance checklist that we are using to monitor the performance. We are focusing, as I've mentioned, Chairperson, on the 30-day payment, irregular expenditure, and the monitoring of the action plan that I've just discussed above. But the one that normally comes up again, I think the committee have always raises, is that all of these issues of non-compliance, what is it that the department is doing? You know about them. In fact, the auditor general even raised the same issues in the current financial year. You know, what are you doing? What are the consequences that you are doing? So we've introduced measures I've mentioned. There's letters that have gone out to people. We've also created a loss control committee, which was not there previously, that will look and analyze all of these issues relating to irregular prudent expenditure and ensure that action is taken to those that are not there.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nassan. I will now move to the way forward, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. And there are certain outstanding issues that the department still needs to deal with, and that is the review and conclude the dispute relating to working hours, as this will affect some of our key outputs. There's the need to strengthen the lease agreement with the TNPA, which prevented the completion of the site visits to selected ports of entry. The filling of critical posts in the department, like the DDG posts, as well as certain specialist areas, and as well as the close and tight cooperation with governing structures that the Auditor General, Risk Management, and Audit Committee to maintain improved audit outcomes for both performance information and financial. Lastly, Chairperson, we would like to thank the Portfolio Committee, without whose help we would not have achieved the outcome, the unqualified outcome that we have received. You have kept us on our toes on these issues, and we hope that with your continued support, Chairperson, that we would move to a clean audit in the next financial year. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
No, thank you very much, and I'm sure also you are aware that we are going to have a date with yourselves about litigation. You need to prepare yourself a little bit thorough and informative. And the sooner we can get that particular document, the better, so that you are able to understand it before we meet with yourselves. And because now, if the Auditor General has indicated to you that issues of litigation is a risk area, and even yourself, you are not capable of making a sound estimate of what may constitute litigation challenges in terms of rents and cents, and then it becomes an area that needs to have special attention. And I think this committee at one time, it has talked to the department then considering establishing a fully fledged legal team, because we were told that you have got a legal unit, and it looks like that legal unit in the department, it is not adequate for the legal challenges that you have, because it looks like litigation is almost one of your core business now. Then if it becomes one of your core business, then you need to respond appropriately. You don't need to treat it as a by-the-way thing. And because you are going to have serious challenges, and you have not spoken to that legal department or whatever, but you definitely need, as it has been pointed out by yourself, together with the Auditor General, that pay attention to litigation. It is bringing you some higher levels of risk in terms of your financial management, prudency, and all that. Honorable members, we have heard the department, and probably it's in some of the responses that they will be giving to your questions, is the status of that, what's called the ceiling on compensation of employees. Remember, it was done last year, February or so, then at one time, then you performed within the limit, the cap, and then at one time, the DG thought that now the he has got some air now that he cannot fill in certain positions. What is the state now? Can you fill the positions? How many of them can you fill? Up to how much can you fill positions and still playing within that particular limit that Treasury has tried to throttle you with? I think it's somewhere along the line of the questions then. You'll need to speak to that because it is very crucial. We can talk about filling positions, vacant positions, but if you still have the cap, then we are just making noise and we may not achieve anything. You must need a status. Can you now fill positions? Is the cap removed or you have got some breathing space within that cap to appoint people? Let's try and talk to that particular matter, Gidi, and look for us. Honorable members, there is a department in front of you. They are very vulnerable. And Mesope, you'll start. And then Figland wanted to speak, and then I think he must be prioritized this time around. Yeah. 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 So that he must earn his salary as well. And then Mekeny, then you'll follow. Dambuza will follow. And then I think Hussein would have heard what you are all saying. And then when you have not covered these questions, you will fill in and then modify some. A point of before. Okay. No, the others are not for today. They are for Thursday. They were friends today.
They want a picture of the moon. Okay, thank you, Chair.
Also, advisor.
Yeah. Can you fire?
Yes, no, I'm not going to fire Jay. I'm going just to ask for the purpose of clarity. Thank you very much.
Order.
Thank you very much.
Honorable Sope wants to lead.
The acting DG.
Yes.
Thanks for the presentation as well. Just to start with by saying, Chair, on page 24 of the AG's report, I want to support what he has proposed for this committee. There are three proposals there. I don't know if the department has been communicated those proposals to the department, because I think it is the way of accountability to the committee as well. That's one. The other issue, Chair, that I want to check with the department is exactly the one that we're just also commenting on. Because now we are told that the moratorium has been lifted on February 2017. And I remember this issue has been coming to the front of the committee, and we've been sympathizing with the department. At some point, we also called the DG of Treasurer to come and give us some clarity. So now, we as the department acting DG, I can't tell you more about your department, but there's many of people are acting. We even called your department acting in Hollywood, because most of the DMs and the provincial managers are acting. So, but in your presentation, you just mentioned one few position, which is the DDG, that need to be prioritized. So I want to get a clarity on that one. And then I just want to get a clarity, Chair. On page 20 of the AG's report, if the department can also elaborate on that one. You tried, Mr. Ngasane, or Mr. Ngele. You tried, but you were not explicit in explaining What is the department intending to take in terms of actions when you're explaining about that security? Because this is a lot of money. And us, as the committee, portfolio committee, we need to know, Wuti, the AG have pointed out the fact that this security company is costing a lot of money. And even the wording from the AG is not even clear. So that's why we need a very clear explanation from the department. And if there are people in your department, because the AG is also saying in page 13, he's saying the management is too slow to respond. And I think the department must tell us, if there are those cases within the department, how many people have been arrested, and what is the department is intending to do with those people who are committing crime within the department, if you are very serious to fight crime. There is one. In page 20, in page 20, under the nature, the AG just said that continuation with ongoing irregular contract DHA, GPW, and Eastern Cape. Oh, IEC. Oh, okay. So further to say that there's a procurement without competitive bidding or quotation, tax clearance certificate, whatever. I just want to get from the department, which one is yours? Because it just combined the three, DHA, GPW, IEC. So which one is specifically for you? And then you can even tell us why, if there is a company that has been granted a tender without a tax clearance certificate, the department must tell us here why. Why the department is doing those things if we are very serious to keep the corruption within South Africa. And, Chair, the other thing that I want to check here, because the department is telling us that they have achieved, in fact, they've exceeded by 18% in achieving the smart cards. So now the question that arises, at one point we were told that you were trying to work even on weekends, but there were some challenges with the union. So now, if you are saying you have exceeded with 18%, so what is the status regarding the Saturdays? And now, where are we regarding that one? And how did you achieve that? I don't want to be negative, because my Honorable Rapport will be saying I'm very good in portraying negativity, but I just want to understand, we must be realistic. The last presentation that we received from the department, especially from the program managers from provinces, they were telling us that it's very impossible now to work with those mobile cards. So in most provinces, those mobile units are dysfunctional, are old, and so on and so on. And so now I want us to understand, with these smart cards that you have achieved, maybe the department, just to clarify, how did they achieve it? And then the last one question, Chair, because other members, they want also to engage. It's also troubling me, this thing of 146 million released to a security contract. The department must come clean to us. Are we only dealing with this security contract, or are other contractors that the department is not telling the portfolio committee? I know that when the minister is coming before the committee, she will have to answer about those things that the DG is accusing the minister, but I think it would be only fair for the department to come clean to the portfolio committee to say it's a security contract, but there are other contracts that are also form part and parcel of this. Because when you look at this amount, you just become shocked. So I will just pause on that questions, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and I don't want to say congratulations to the acting DG, because I know the department is what lots of people act for years. Actually, Chair, I thought this presentation was going to touch on the port of entries where we short of staff, and what is your plan to go forward where we can secure our borders. The second issue, Chairperson, I know some of the questions have been asked by my colleague here. I'm still worried about the weekends, because sometimes the weekend is good for the students, who are free on Saturdays besides the school holidays. What is your plan B on that issue of opening the Saturdays? I can see that you've already put steps that should be taken according to the AG's recommendation. But what does the department require to remediate challenges in regard to audit action plan? The last question, Chairperson, is the question of accommodation. Is it very difficult to communicate with for the accommodation with the Department of Public Works? Because every time we talk about accommodation, I think it should be easy because it's a department of government to another one. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Kenya.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. I think some of my questions have been asked, especially by Honorable Shobe, but on a different way. So I think I'll touch the different part of it. Starting from the coordination of ongoing irregular contracts, that to my understanding, they cut across DHA, GBW, NIC. So meaning that auditor's findings, as much as they say that there's a non-compliance here by the FCM. So I understand that you say that one of your remedies is to go back to basics. If there's no movement, then monitoring, something could be done. But my question is that have those people been, those employees been reprimanded? Because you can't just say if you are going to if we are saying what remedy measures are there in place to keep this non-compliance, because this is non-compliance at the end of the day. Well, especially that really we are concerned, because when you look at what Honorable Shop has just alluded also, because really to talk out the procurements without competitive bidding or quotation processes, deviation without justified reasons, that means that a no valid tax clearances, that really talks to non-compliance. Therefore, really, there must be somebody who is being reprimanded here, not just to say you are going to go back to basics and monitor. So I think that must be explained to us what type of monitoring is going to be. It must go hand in hand to our understanding with reprimanding the employee that doesn't comply with the legislation. Secondly, my question also, that's why I say they are almost the same, talking about the On page 24 and 32, there's this issue that talks to unresolved labor dispute, which relates to working hours. I'm concerned about page 24 that talks to the birth rate, because that is why we're concerned about these working hours, because there's that those babies that are delivered during the weekends and holidays. Therefore, there will be no clear statistics if this continues, the relationship between the labor unions versus the department. Now, as much as we know that those are also touches also to the working rights, the rights of the workers to work overtime. So, is the department prepared to pay the salaries on the working hours, the overtime, so that really maybe the problem is there, because the people cannot work more than 40 hours per week without any compensation there. Maybe that is why there's no agreement with the labor unions. Also, on the issue of page 41, talking about the way forward, now there is a talk about that there must be a strengthening of the lease agreements. My question, because as much as we are saying that strengthening, when will be the lease agreement be finalized so as to acquire infrastructure at these three Australian maritime ports of entry? Because now, if you take, you are going to strengthen them, but there's no time frame in this issue. It just says that you are going to strengthen the lease agreement. When is the tentative time for signing this lease, for finalizing this lease agreement? The issue of lifting the moratorium has just been said also. That talks to vacancy rate. And really, we are worried because most of the time, the managers there, there's a managers who are working in the province, and both in the one person works in the province and also in the district because there are no managers. So that dual duty is really strenuous. Also, really, I think this must be clear that not only the DDTs, also the managers are so critical in this issue. Yeah. On page 27, the second paragraph, maybe that is a cut and paste. Let me read it. Let me read this cut and paste I'm talking about. It talks to with the targets. The Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs adopted the BMA bill in March 2017. The NASA Senate debate on the bill is planned for the 11th of May 2017. It is still planned, but as now we are in October. So I think that means that sometimes the cut and paste is always there. Now this is talking about that we are still planning for the 11th of May. So maybe can just, maybe if it's an error, can just explain to us why, what do you mean by that when you're talking about that issue. I think lastly, Chairperson. Oh yes, the strengthening of police systems. All right, that is all, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Dambu.
Thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, you will bear with us. We'll all touch on the report of the AG. Because whilst I was listening to the presenter, he was just saying indirectly, he was saying, I have done my part. The ball is in your court. When I was asking that those questions I asked, but the response I received. So all of us maybe will touch the issues that have been raised. Thank you, Chair. I think I will take the issue of the AG that relates to the lack of consequences by the department, not taking the consequences, and it also appears to the three institutions, but now we're going to talk about the DHA, which says is a root cause for non-compliance. I think we must take that statement very seriously, that the department must ensure that next time we don't get this type of a report from the Auditor General. And it also refers to the issue of the interventions that needed to be taken on the financial and performance management across five indicators, including the record keeping and monitoring compliance. I'm pointing this Chairperson because next time when we come, I don't think we can expect this type of a report. And then the last point on the AG is the issue of the regulations where it says the actions implemented by management to address prior year, which means the previous year audit findings, was not done in time and or effective in time and not effective. I'm just drawing attention now, so that they must not take these reports, they must go back and read this report because they do have this report, and check in this money, the Chairperson. Next time, these things must come here before the committee. Zingekho comments is finalized, they addressed, so that seven is being handled. That was my first comment. The question on the presentation by the department. I've got a slide 9. On slide 9, the first bullet, it says the department, together with the Department of the Planning and Monitoring and Evaluation, commissioned a national evaluation study to scientifically determine the reasons for citizens not registering their children within 30 days. We've been engaging with the department on this matter several times, and they were giving us the reports, but I don't remember getting this type of a report or a feedback, because I think by virtue of having this study, seemingly they do have a problem. But to me, I think we need to get, Chairperson, we request to get this report by the study, which was commissioned. We don't know when was it commissioned, but at the end of the day, we need this report, because now it was a commitment or an effort that was taken by two departments. So it means really you can get something that is going to give us a clear indication, because all of us seemingly siyaqajela, Chairperson. Then the other issue is on slide 19. On the 96 offices assessed and reassessed for threats and risks. We don't know when was it done, and then what is happening. Is this report out now, and what is the outcome? Although this is a 2016-17 financial year, but we need to know when was this done, and is this report out already, and then when can we expect the department to come before us and report about this? And then on slide 31, the last one for me, budget cuts, fleet management. I'm worried about this, Chairperson. I want to check from the department, does this refer to the national department only, or it does include the provinces? Because last time when we got the report from the reports from the provinces, there was a problem on this fleeting, fleet management. So I want to know if it refers to the national only, or it's an integrated report from the provincial level. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Hussein.
Chair, thank you very much. A lot has been said about the issue of the accountability. I'll try not to repeat those specific slides. But I do want to make the point that I think one of the most important slides for me in the AG's report was that slide in the relationship between accountability and corruption, which leads me to the point of this supply chain management processes, because that's the thing that actually contributes and becomes a source for corruption. And I get it that not every non-compliance on the SCM processes leads to corruption, but when you adopt a zero tolerance approach, then the chances of any official even trying to take a chance as far as SCM processes are concerned will become minimized, because you've developed in an established a culture of, you know, no tolerance. If I can use the words of the Auditor General in his report, when he said that you need a less tolerant approach towards these things. Which brings me to the point that the response to the question that the Chairperson asked earlier on. If I can just ask you to please just go back to that slide. I think it is slide 38 or 39. I think it's 39 in your document, 38 in mine. That's the one. And I must say, I myself was not convinced with the response that we got. And if I read that first bullet point, it says, financial statements submitted for auditing were not prepared in accordance with the prescribed financial reporting framework. I got the understanding and the explanation from your colleague around the intricacies with DERCO and the money, how it was supposed to be handled. We've been getting that explanation for a long time now, so some of us understand it. But for me, the critical thing is simply this: not prepared in accordance with the prescribed financial reporting framework. That tells me that there is a prescribed financial framework, and that the department auditors have not conformed to that. It's simple as that. It's got nothing to do with the other issue. Perhaps maybe the question by the Chairperson was not understood properly, which is why I'm explaining it so specifically. It blows my mind, actually, that when you have auditors and senior people in the department who are supposed to understand all these things, that you just can't comply with just a chamber. And therein lies the problem, in my mind, because then it's this culture of a zero-tolerant approach, or the lack thereof. Because if you can't get something like that right, you know what it reminds me of? A guy who's a mechanic, but his car is constantly broken. He's a terrible mechanic. I mean, you finish the rest in terms of somebody who can't comply with just very basic prescribed financial reporting framework. You can't get that part right. I don't know how you're going to get the other part right. Because then it leads to the whole issue of accountability for me as well, in that you, when there are staff who don't conform, then what action there gets taken? And so, Chair, I really like to hear a response from the acting Director General to give us a sense of comfort to say that we are going to take action against staff members who don't conform to the rules and regulations. Just give us that sense of comfort, because these things come back over and over and over again. I'm going to rush through some of the things and perhaps deal with the others if there's some time. I know my colleagues are hungry now. I've covered some of them, so I'm trying to skip through if you don't mind. On my page 10, it should be your page 11, there are details around the public-private partnership to upgrade the 6 ports of entry. I don't recall whether that came before us, and if I did, I'm sorry if I don't remember, but who's the private company and how do they benefit around this private partnership on the upgrade of the ports of entry? Let me just double check if I'm giving you the right page reference, if you don't mind. I think it's page 10, yeah, or 11 on yours. I'm always interested, Chair, to see this issue around detection reviews and risks analyzed. And recently we had the managers of different provinces that came before us and presented a number of areas of concern. And one of the things that we talked about, Chair, you'll remember, is this whole issue of photo swapping. Excuse me, for me, which is concerning, because I know that the smart IDs were mooted as one of the most secure forms of identification that we've ever had. And if there is now suddenly a syndicate that's been able to crack the system or being able to photo swap, if that's what they call it, is that issue being looked at by the department as a priority? Because if that we don't control that and get out of hand, it means the entire integrity of the smart ID system is going to be brought into question. We're going to go back to the same problem of hundreds of thousands of false ID documents. On page 40 or thereabout, just you might have to go back and forth on your doc, there's one page different. There is a reference made to awards made to close family members, but the details are not there, so if you don't mind just expanding on that a bit. Was there action taken against those staff members? Chair, I want to ask this issue of the smart IDs. We've had a number of presentations here on the whole rollout of the smart ID system in the banks. I don't ever recall, however, the involvement of SASBO in that process. What exactly is their role, SASBO's role, in this rolling out of the smart IDs and their negotiation with the banks? And how do they benefit from the whole process? Chair, I want to raise the issue about litigation, as you rightfully raised, which is equally a concern for us. I think we've raised it here before. And I'm encouraged that you've raised the matter separately so that we at some stage have some discussion on the whole issue around increasing litigation against the department. It is a concerning factor. Atlantic corporate travel. Is that a matter that we're planning to settle, or is it part of this also outstanding legal matters? And why are we not paying that company? Is there, if you don't mind just expanding on that. And the last two questions, last question, Chairperson, is these mobile units, it's been picked up and reported that we've always unable to reach the targets around the registration of births. When I look at that department, that particular program, it makes me realize, and after listening to the responses from the provinces in the recent weeks as well, that the part of the problem is this whole issue of poor network connectivity. No, it's fine. Poor network connectivity is part of the problem that contributes to a number of hospitals that are not online, so they can't do the birth registrations. Then you've got the problem with the mobile units that have satellite problems. In Mpumalanga province, for example, I think there was only 15 out of the 31 hospitals that actually have that connectivity. So naturally, that contributes towards us not being able to reach the target, so we know where the problem is. And those mobile units, most of them are parked and are now unoperational. Is it because of connectivity problems? And the company that supplied us those units, is it Double Ring? Are we holding them accountable, or are we going to be settling that matter that's in court at the moment? Is there any plans by the department to settle the issue of the case with Double Ring? The last question, Chair, is related to this issue about Fireblade, all of which are related to litigation. I understand from what I pick up, and perhaps maybe next week when the Minister is here, I'll put the question more directly to her. But now that I have you here as the opportunity, is there a plan to settle this matter with Fireblade and the Oppenheimers? For me, I'm particularly concerned that if what I'm reading in the media about the minister having to meet with the Oppenheimers and there's a plan to settle it, already the Department of Home Affairs is suffering a massive reputational knock, given what has happened recently around the whole Gupta saga, which has not gone away. And now there is the allegation around the Oppenheimers' engagement with the minister and an attempt to settle it. Is the department planning to settle the Fireblade case, the Atlantic corporate travel case, and the Double Ring matter? Or is it not going to be settled at all? Is it going to go straight to court? Thank you very much, Chair. I have no further questions.
Thank you very much, Kekana. Thank you very much. I feel disappointed, even if the department has an unqualified audit report. It's very much disappointing, and I just want to give an advice to the administration. You see, Che, since I joined Home Affairs, we've been raising one thing. For sure, even if the secretary can read the minutes of each and every meeting, you'll find that we have been raising one thing until today. And maybe the officials must know that some of us have been in that bench where they are sitting before them. We've been administrators. We know the attitude of administration, the attitude of bureaucrats. Chair, we can't raise one issue every day. I don't want to touch what you and all my colleagues have said. I wanted to propose one thing. One, there must be a serious investigation within the department. Two, you can see when this official talks, all of them, they are not giving you a clarity of the issues that we are concerned about. Three, you can see that there is a cover-up in all of them. Four, if you saw the AG when he was giving the report, he contradicted himself many times. That's why I said I don't want to speak. I'm covered. Because I knew what was happening. In fact, we have done a mistake by calling an AG to give this report in front of the department. He was going to reveal many things. He was about to expose something, but I can see that the man is not himself. If you check, there is another question here. Page 25, whereby we know that, as you said, that we will check the issue of legal litigation. We have been raising it in all the meetings. They are telling us about claims that can be 1.2 billion, but in reality is 2 billion. That was the reality. And what about to account for the remaining amount? So we don't want to go far with these things. I think maybe, even if we can ask the acting DG, it's still going to give us a problem. I think the department itself is rotten, and it needs a thorough investigation. Which means we, as Parliament, we must come back and issue an inquiry to go and check all these shenanigans. To my understanding, I fail to understand that after you have seen that person X has flouted the rules in terms of this procurement security company, you still write a letter to ask if he can be suspended or what. While you're supposed to suspend and make sure that you recover the whole amount. So that's why I'm saying that I don't want to talk much about this thing. I propose that if the minister was here, she was supposed to make sure that there's a serious investigation in all of them. All the DDGs, including even the DDG who resigned, all of them, they must account on this thing. Because if there's a problem, you must know that there's a problem with the head. Then it's where it must start. And now, that investigation, we will request the minister to do it. And Tina, as our work is to do oversight, we must come up with inquiry to inquire about all these things. I thank you, Chair, and if possible, I will come back. Thank you.
Okay. I was just about just simply to ask that you should just tone your language a little bit down, because officials may not have the luxury of defending themselves when they are called shenanigans.
No, I'm not saying.
So I was just saying that.
Chair, let me clarify something.
Yeah.
I'm not saying the officials are shenanigans. There are shenanigans that are happening in the department, and
yeah,
please don't defend them.
Yeah.
We have been there, comrades or officials. We know very well how we work and our attitude, and we know that some are witching, some are doing their own things. You are not the same. That's why there must be investigation, so that we will be able to take the rotten apples out. It's one thing that we should do. Thank you.
Now, Gagana, I hear you. All what I'm saying is that we just need to recognize that the officials may not have the same freedom of trying to protect themselves in a meeting like this one. So, therefore, then the language that we use then needs to be measured to a certain extent, and just to recognize that particular situation. Because I'm not going to allow an official to actually throw stones at a member and try to defend himself or herself. Yes, so now that's the unfortunate responsibility that I have. Yeah. I think it's Rapudi.
Thank you very much for the presentation. You know, these issues of litigation, you know, with the road and safety, transport, they've got road accident fund. And I'm just asking myself, because our constitution, it is really accommodating. You know, it accommodates lots of things, and that is where we lose cases. Home Affairs cannot have funds, really, like the road accident fund. We can have a fund whereby when we are litigated, we can be able to go and there, because it is our constitution really that is making things really so open and so relaxed, and that, we know, with immigration and all those kind of a thing. That is what I wanted really to ask. And other thing is about this issue of people not being paid on time. What can be the reason? And so, because I think it's a misconduct, because it is stipulated on the PFMA. So what can be the reason? And the AG, when they do their audit, there is no any other document that really support, you know, that kind of that gap, why people were not paid on time and all. And on page 39, compliance with legislation, I think that is every management prerogative. I view that if people, they don't comply, it's a misconduct. Heads must roll. But why this thing keeps on coming and coming and coming? You know, that is what really I really wanted to check. What can be the problem? Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. I think the opportunity was for Honorable Gumede. For some other reason, I think he has just slipped out of the room. I wanted to propose that we give the department an opportunity to consult and the acting DG to have a public participation among the delegation while we try and have some lunch, if it is ready outside.
Okay.
Then when we come back after lunch, strictly 30 minutes, then around quarter past, then we come back, then the department responds, then we call it a day.
No.
Thank you very much.